this week's edition of Food Friday. We've all probably shared a meal with a picky eater before. Maybe it was one of your kids who didn't want to eat the veggies. Maybe it was a friend who sticks to what they like. Maybe it's you sometimes. There's no shame in being a picky eater. Everybody has different experiences with food. There's some evidence our food preferences could be linked to our genes, even. Our next guest is here to help us cook for the picky eaters in our lives and find new ways to prepare foods that we think we don't like. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you cook for picky eaters in your life? Have you found tricks to mask the flavor of some foods or sneak things into a dish? Are there things that you used to not like, but you found a way to like them? Tell us about it. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Deb Perlman is creator of the cooking site Smitten Kitchen. She's the author of three cookbooks. The latest is called Smitten Kitchen Keepers, New Classics for Your Forever Files. She used to write guest articles, by the way, for Bon Appetit magazine called Picky Eaters Club. Deb, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, I think Deb Perlman, if she cooks a meal, everybody's going to like it. Nobody's going to be picky about this, but the pickiness is coming from inside the house, Deb. I guess your kids sometimes are picky, right?
It's like you knew. yeah, the picky eaters are inside the house. I actually feel like, you know, a recipe writer, a cookbook author that has really picky kids that don't want to eat any of her food, it's like hubris. Like, I had these children coming. I created them. I need them so they can keep me balanced.
What kinds of foods do you find you encounter prime pickiness on for your kids in particular?
Oh boy! I mean, where does one start? It could be. I mean, I guess spice is the obvious thing, which is really a bummer because although that's changing though, because my son is now, he's turning 14, he's going into high school, and he definitely will put some hot sauce on his food. But it took a bunch of years, so I think they'll get there. But my younger one, if it has spice, if it's like, I don't know. I'm making eggplant parmesan tonight, and I feel like she's definitely not going to touch it, even though she likes all these flavors. You know, even if she's a little skeptical of eggplant. So it should be fun. I can keep you posted on how it goes, but I can probably guess.
And I've seen you in interviews, Deb, sometimes say that you're a closet picky eater for some things yourself.
I am such a closet picky eater. I don't know if it's just me or is it other people who do the food thing, but like, I wonder if in some way we're driven to it because we want things to be a certain way and they're not. I mean, that's kind of where you start. So I didn't really like eggplant parmesan growing up, but I didn't really understand like the breaded soggy thing. But then I started making it my own way and now I love it. So that's kind of, you know, where it comes from. And that's where it goes, I think, where you might start by thinking you don't like things and then you know, can get to the bottom of it by cooking through them.
Well, and that's, for me, eggplant is one of those foods. I never, like, hated it. I never liked it. I would never eat it by choice. If somebody made it, fine, I'll eat it. And then I started having it, you know, people would make it at State Fair and stuff, fry it up with some lemon and a little Parmesan. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, my gateway for eggplant. Mm-hmm. Now I like it all kinds of ways. Is that sometimes the key to bringing people into a new food, finding that one way they like it and then branching out from there?
Absolutely. And you have no idea when it's going to happen or where. So my advice would be, if you have picky eaters like coming from inside your house, the best thing you can do is try to keep making what you've always made and what you're craving, because you have no idea when it's going to be that they're going to like pick up a lamb chop off the table and go to town on it. And you won't find out if you just make the boring food that they say they like every day.
Now, there have been whole cookbooks, Deb, out there on the market that are basically like, yeah, trick your family into eating these foods that are good for them, even though they don't like them. And, you know, how to disguise vegetables in cake or whatever. What do you think about that notion?
I'm generally opposed. I kind of feel like if I'm sticking like spinach in a brownie, I'm probably teaching the kids to hate both spinach and brownies, which seems like a crime in and of itself. I think that people will come around to it eventually, but they might just need to try it a few ways. I also think, I don't know, I've never been able to articulate it well, but I feel like there's this whole other psychology at home where when you come home, you want your mom or your dad to make the food the way you like it. And the disappointment is less that the food isn't what you want, but more that the people who are supposed to cater to your every whim and beck and call didn't do it. I just feel like it's just a theory, but I just think it comes out more in the safety of our own home. For example, let's say you go home every year for Thanksgiving and your mom always makes turkey your favorite way and you love the way she makes turkey. And one year you come home and she's made it a completely different way. Would you not feel a little affronted? You knew I liked it this way and you made it this other way. I sometimes feel like that's what I'm doing with at the dinner table. This betrayal.
It's Food Friday, and we're talking to Deb Perlman from the cooking site Smitten Kitchen, author of books of the same title. We're talking about picky eating, ways to cook to overcome pickiness amongst our kids, even amongst ourselves. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you're willing to admit, are you now or have you ever been a picky eater yourself? Did you find ways to overcome it and try new stuff that you didn't think you liked originally? Have you dealt with this with your own kids at home? Have you found ways to get them to try that new thing? Maybe even eventually to like that new thing. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We got a note from our producer, Rochelle, who says, I'd love to hear about olives. I really want to be a person who loves olives. I try out once a year. Probably an urban myth that if you try them you like 17 times, you'll like them. Okay, no, so this, I bring this up, Deb, because this was me. I used to hate olives. Mm-hmm. I had some housemates who liked some green olives on pizza with other good stuff. I ate it that way. Again, this was my gateway into olives. Now I love them. I'll just snack on olives of various shapes and sizes. Do you have thoughts on how somebody like Rochelle, for some reason, wants to acquire an olive taste, how she could do it?
You know, that's a tricky one because I have members of my family, people I know, and they just don't like it. I guess my question is it the brininess? Like, do you also dislike pickles or is it olives in particular? Because I don't think I thought I was an olive person growing up, and I still, like, my stomach actually turns by the black canned ones. I just don't like them. There's something squishy about them. I'm sorry. I should speak more maturely. I don't mean to yuck anyone's yum. But I love those dark green ones that are a little, they almost taste more like vegetables to me. And I love, you know, there's different ones. And I like a good Kalamata one. And I also, there's these little black cured ones. They go by a couple different names. I think they're like Gaeta olives. And I think they're incredibly salty. But you mince them up and they make a pasta sauce just pop off. So I think definitely trying a bunch of different varieties. Mm. Can help, but I also think it's okay. Like, or maybe sometimes it becomes something like I have this chicken that I love to make with olives and lemon and garlic and thyme, and it comes together so well. So sometimes the gateway is just it being in a dish that you love and it carries it, and you can kind of see where what it does there.
Awesome. It's also okay to just not like olives, I think. I like
it's
them
okay.
Now, though.
You guys, I don't like beets, okay? So it's fine. It's just, it's never going to happen. It's okay. I've made peace with it. I don't know that the internet has. I'm going to get some emails.
Let's bring out a caller now at 800-642-1234. Cassie is with us in Lake Mills. Cassie, hi.
Hi. I just have a really quick story. I have two girls, and they're grown now. But they were always very picky eaters. And I did tend to make excuses when there were other people around and say, oh, well, they're girls. They eat like birds. And I would feed them really what they like. But one time, I will never forget this, my one daughter would not touch tomatoes, didn't like anything with tomatoes. She would pick them out of any salad or anything. And we were at my dad and his wife's house, and she made BLTs. It was a hot summer day, and big chunks, thick slices of tomatoes. And if Brianna didn't just eat those sandwiches, I think she had two. So later I asked her, I said, well, what is with you? You don't like tomatoes. I can't believe you ate that. I told Grace how wonderful it was. And she said, well, I didn't want to be rude. And actually, it was so good.
So I guess the big question, Cassie, is then did she eat tomatoes henceforth?
Yeah. Oh, she eats spaghetti, all kinds of pasta dishes with tomatoes. Yep. All the time.
Cassie, thanks for the call. Deb, I wonder if the secret there was the B. Like, can you make any food better with a little bacon on top of it?
I mean, I generally feel that this is a time-honored tradition. You can put some bacon in a broccoli salad. You can put bacon on your green beans, and suddenly everyone's a green bean fan. It definitely works. It's salt. And if you don't eat bacon, I mean, you could – I love putting, like, crushed salted pistachios. There are other things. I'd say olives, but I know they're very contentious, that you can do to add that kind of pop that makes it a little more exciting.
Thanks a lot for that call. Oh, and speaking of kids, and Deb, you mentioned those beets that you don't like. In my household, my kids are growing up now too, but Dad was the only one who liked to eat beets. Everybody else hated them, but it kind of helped with other foods because, like, if they weren't sure about something, it was like, well, hey, at least it's not beets, right? Can we set up one food as the fall guy to promote other ones, or is that just my strategy? I don't know.
I feel like I do a lot of negotiating. I feel like I do a lot of, like, please just try a bite. You don't have to like it. If you were actually to tune into my table at dinner time, you might hear me saying, could I get you to sniff it? Would you lick the fork that the food used to be on? Parenting is all about dignity.
Yeah. It's Food Friday. We're talking to Deb Pearlman of the cooking site Smitten Kitchen, author of the Smitten Kitchen series of books, talking about cooking for picky eaters and how to make the foods we don't like taste good, maybe acquire some taste. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you found ways to enjoy foods that you didn't used to like? What worked for you? Do you or have you ever cooked for picky eaters, spouses, children, friends, you name it? Did you find ways to overcome that pickiness? Join in at 800-642-1234. Or was the solution just to make them cook for themselves? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. It's Food Friday. We're picking up our chat with Deb Pearlman, cookbook author, creator of the cooking site Smitten Kitchen. She's with us today to help cook for the picky eaters in our lives, whether that's someone else or ourselves, and find ways to learn to enjoy the foods we might think we don't like. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have an experience to share or a question maybe about how to appreciate a kind of food that you don't quite appreciate yet? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls. Juanita is with us in Annawa. Juanita, hi. What did you want to tell us about?
Hi. When I was younger, I could not eat potatoes. There was absolutely no way you could fix a potato that I liked. And I told the lady before, I actually would vomit if I had to eat them. Now I love potatoes. I don't honestly know what changed, but I also know that my firstborn child, when she was little, hated potatoes.
Interesting. So maybe something genetic. I don't know. Juanita, thanks a lot for the call. Deb, I feel like potatoes are one of those things that, like, I want to give all, like, my kids would just eat all the potatoes, and the tricky thing was getting them to eat the non-potato portions of meals. I don't know if you ran into that, too.
Absolutely. And almost like, wait, does this include french fries or, like, tater tots? But I also, like, it is really funny as, like, a parent, like, spending a lot of time trying to convince your kids to eat things that you absolutely hated as a kid and can't pretend you don't understand where they're coming from. Like, you do a lot of that.
Thanks a lot for the call, Juanita. Now, I think a common experience for parents is you want your kids to eat more vegetables, and sometimes you're lucky and they love all the vegetables. Sometimes you don't. Do you have thoughts on expanding the vegetable palate for kids?
All right. So every kid's different. Every kids are different. Every family is different. But sometimes I find my younger, who's definitely the pickier of the two and always has been, she's weird. I was just going to steam broccoli last night and she only wanted it raw. I'm like, all right, here's your bowl of raw. Sometimes she also, I've seen her like crunch on cauliflower raw, but I cannot get her to eat it cooked. I really don't care how they eat it. If they want to eat it raw, like, you know, it's fine with me. So I tend to, and dinner is always running late in my house. I'm not good at schedules, so I don't like to be rushed. So dinner is always running late, but I'll often just cut up a plate of mixed vegetables, like whatever I have in the fridge, and I'll just kind of like put it between the children, like vegging on the sofa. And I'm always delighted to find that a lot of it's gone when I come back. And it's nice because then we get to dinner time and they've kind of already eaten their vegetables and I don't feel like I have to nudge as much at the table.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Aaron is with us in Appleton. Aaron, hi.
Hi. I am super interested in this because I have toddlers and I read somewhere in one of those parenting books that it takes 8 to 10 tries for a picky eater to start developing like a taste for the food. And I'm wondering if you found that to be true. And is there any way to shorten the like 10 tries of peas before my kids leave them.
And Aaron, I want to hear your firsthand experience. Are you at try number 10 on something? Is it working?
For the most part, yes. Yes, I'm at try number 10. My kids now love peas and broccoli, but I still can't get them to eat potatoes, much like your earlier caller. And like things with squishy textures, they just won't do it.
Interesting. Aaron, thanks a lot for that call. Yeah, keep plugging away there. Deb, I don't know if the 8 to 10 rule is going to be true for everyone, but that repeated, hey, give it a try. It worked for me for olives. I don't know. Maybe it'll work for kids.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever counted how many times I've done something, and I'm actually very impressed if anybody gets to 8 and continues trying, because I don't know that I have that in me. But I will say that if I'm really craving something, like my husband and I were discussing with back to the eggplant parmesan, just because it's what's in my kitchen right now. If I'm really craving something, I don't want to deny it to myself just because like I know the children or child is going to nag on it. So I feel like something you can do is just continue to make the food you crave as often as possible. And yes, I might make some plain couscous on the side or figure out some other ways to like get the kid to the table. Maybe I can get them to spoon some of the tomato sauce over it. Like, you know, we're getting there. Maybe try a little bite. But I feel like when you start denying yourself the things that you really like because other people aren't going to like them, that's when cooking really becomes drudgery and you kind of hate the process and you dread making dinner. And I think nobody wins when that happens. So I feel like fight the good fight if you can.
Thanks a lot for that call and good luck. It's Food Friday. We're getting some help with cooking for picky eaters, whether it's our kids or ourselves. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. Deb Perlman is with us from Smitten Kitchen. Back to your calls now. Kay is with us in Madison. Kay, hello.
Hi. I hate Brussels sprouts, but I keep hearing that if I pan fried them with bacon, that I would like them. So I keep wanting to go over to somebody's house who makes them that way to find out if that would change my mind.
And Kay, I got to ask, when was the last time you tried Brussels sprouts?
Well,
a long time.
It's been a while.
Okay, thank you.
I
asked.
Seem mushy.
I gotcha. Kay, thanks for the call. Now, Deb, I ask because I've read that the Brussels sprouts people might have grown up with, they're not the same. They've changed some of the varieties. They were built for travel and not for flavor. And Brussels sprouts, and I can vouch for this, they taste better now than they did when I was a kid.
They really do. They're sweeter. They're more like little cabbages, like halfway between greens and cabbages. And they're also, I mean, Brussels sprouts were terrible when we were growing up. I only got them from the freezer, so they were already, like when you defrost a frozen vegetable, it's already mushy. It's not going to get any better with cooking. It's going to get softer. So if you do not like soft, supple Brussels sprouts, you're not going to have liked it very much growing up. But it's changed so much. You've got raw shaved Brussels sprout salads. You've got like ones where they're roasted until they're crispy. I love roasting them with olive oil and a ton of salt until they're almost black on the outside and they're almost creamy inside. They're so good. And yes, you could throw bacon on that cheap pan too. A little drizzle of maple syrup. I think that's why people like Brussels sprouts in a way that they never did when I was a kid.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks a lot for bringing that up, Kay. Jerry joins us now in Manawa. Jerry, hi.
Hi, it's Terry with a T.
Terry, I'm sorry. What did you want to tell us about, Terry?
When I first got married, my wife was a limited eater because her mom was so picky. So we came up with a rule of two bite, taster bite. And whatever was on your plate, you had to have two bites. And then if you didn't like it after that, fine. Next time, try it again.
Excellent. And did your wife pick up new foods once she was skeptical about, but the two-bite rule helped her out?
Oh, yeah. She's tried all kinds of foods now, and we carried it on to our children. And except for one of them being a vegetarian, they eat quite a wide arrangement of food.
Interesting, Jerry. Thanks a lot for the call. Deb, I did the one-bite rule with my kids. Maybe I should have tried two. What do you think?
I mean, I'm trying to get them to sniff it sometimes. Like, I'm so far behind the ball on this. I'll get them as close as they can. We often do one bite. Sometimes we'll get really belligerent about the one bite when we're like, this is so ridiculous. I know they love this. Like, I know they love this. I cannot, like, sometimes you don't have the patience to, like, indulge it. And honestly, those times, it's surprisingly worked. I won't say that the next time we put it out, they'll remember that they liked it last time, although we try to remind them. But they surprise us sometimes with the things they get really into that they swear they weren't. Oh, just one more thing. I feel like something that doesn't come up a lot is that, you know, the kids, they get snacks in the afternoon, whether you want them to or not. People are always trying to give kids food. Or they're, you know, they come home from school or camp and they're really hungry. And I just feel like they often come to the dinner table and they're not as hungry as they should be. And a lot of times when my kids say that they don't like it, they're just not hungry. Like, they might have gotten hungry if it was a plate of French fries, but it wasn't hunger. It was just like nobody turns down French fries, except for those people who called and said they don't like
French
fries.
Right, yeah. That's a good point. Time for one more caller. Dot is with us in Manitowoc. Dot, hello.
Hi. I suggest reverse psychology. For instance, if your child is 6 years old and you have broccoli, you tell them, don't you dare eat this until you're 7 years old. And then if there's a 7 years old or whatever age that you choose, and perhaps they will indulge on that food or sneak it while you're not looking, they'll say, oh, I'm going to sneak this because my mother said I can't eat this until I'm 7 years old.
And did it actually work, Dot? Did they really do it?
I never thought of it until much,
oh, too late. Okay.
Many years later. It seems that my children ate what I put on the table because that's all they had to eat.
Excellent. Dot, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Deb, any parting words of advice for people, adult or children, to try something new, even if they're skeptical?
I think that you shouldn't worry too much if somebody's picky. I would say roll with it. Don't lose a lot of sleep over it. I think that most people who grow up picky don't end up being picky adults. I mean, there are exceptions, but it's not all people. And it doesn't mean that they won't be healthy eaters that are curious about food around them. So I think, like, do what you need to do to get by. Try to offer a variety of varied diet, but don't lose any sleep over it. Excellent. I think the kids are going to be okay.
Excellent. Deb, thanks, as always, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on.
That's Deb Perlman, creator of the cooking site Smitten Kitchen. She's the author of 3 cookbooks. Her latest is called Smitten Kitchen Keepers: New Classics for Your Forever Files. She was with us on Food Friday today to share advice on cooking for picky eaters and finding new ways to enjoy the foods we don't like. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Living an active lifestyle is one way to keep ourselves healthy and mobile as we age. But as our bodies change with time, our fitness routines may have to change along with it. Our next guest is a physical therapy expert joining us with advice on how to adapt our exercise habits so we can stay active well into old age. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How have your exercise habits changed as you age? What are some activities you've been able to keep doing as you've gotten older? What are some you've left behind? Or have you found new ways to get exercise over the years or decades? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Carlin Ault is a clinical associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Milwaukee. Carlin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob. It's my pleasure to be here.
Before we get into the how, let's talk a little bit about the why. Carlin, what are the benefits of keeping exercise going, keeping fitness going as we get older?
Well, as we age, our muscles and bones can change a little bit, and it's important to stay strong, especially in those functional muscle groups that help us get up and down off of the ground, get in and out of chairs, cars, those sorts of things. And it is true, if you don't use it, you will lose it. So it's especially important through the aging process to continue to load our muscles and bones and continue to push ourselves so we have the stimulus to add more muscle and bone.
You know, the workout my 20-year-old daughters might be doing now might not be right for me. How do we evaluate as we get older, you know, this is the appropriate thing to accomplish those goals you just lined out? This maybe isn't the thing I do anymore.
Well, of course, everything is individualized. If you have any underlying conditions or you're on certain medications, those things can make a difference. But you may be able to do a lot of the exercises that your 20-year-old daughter is doing. So don't sell yourself short. We want to make sure that we're continuing to strengthen our muscles. And the good news is While we have some physiological and biological changes in our tissues with aging, the good news is those tissues are still very responsive to appropriate loading. So you can add muscle mass, you can add some strength to your bone, or slow down the rate of the decline by staying active. I always like to say we all need to move more and sit less. And anything that you do is better than nothing. So that's a good place to start.
That is. Let's talk about strength a little bit. You mentioned some key muscle groups for doing things like mm-hmm. getting up and down, things like that. What are some of the muscle groups we might focus on? What are some good entry points to exercising those zones?
Yeah, that's a great question. I focus a lot on sit to stand or being able to get up off of the floor. As we're aging, or really at any age, we can sometimes find ourselves on the floor. But as you are aging and becoming a little bit weaker, which is part of the normal aging process, is you do lose some muscle mass, to make sure you're focusing on the muscles that are used for functional tasks. So if you're sitting in a chair and you stand up, you need your glutes, which is your backside, and your quads on the front of your thigh to be able to help you lift your body weight to be able to stand up. So anything that's involving some sit to stand activities are very important for those muscle groups. Also, the outside of your hips, when we walk, we stand on one leg for part of the time and we're swinging the other leg. So making sure the outside of our leg muscles are nice and strong so we stay stable. It's all about reducing your risk of having a fall, because falls can really disrupt your life, and staying strong will allow you to be able to better able to catch yourself or prevent yourself from falling. But at least if you find yourself on the floor, you've got the muscle strength to get back up.
And then how about keeping our cardiovascular exercise going over time?
Yeah, that's another great question. So a muscle is muscle. So the heart is a muscle, and we have to exercise that just like we exercise our peripheral muscles. And the target heart rate you want to work hard enough that you're challenging your muscles, whether it's a muscle in your thigh or your heart muscle. So we always do need to be pushing ourselves a little bit above what our daily level of function is. For cardiovascular exercise, you want to be trying to get around 60 to 80% of your heart rate for whatever period of time you can do that for. The guideline is 150 minutes per week of moderate physical activity. So if you break that up, if you're doing a little over 30 minutes or so per day of aerobic physical activity, that is a good place to start. But you'd like to push yourself a little more than just what you're typically used to doing.
Talking to Carlin Ault, clinical associate professor at UW-Milwaukee on physical therapy, talking about our changing exercise and fitness needs as we age. You can join in with your questions or your story at 800-642-1234. James is with us now in Fountain City. James, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me. Say, I'm 75. And I started with endurance sports, in the late 70s or so, doing Birkebeiners, cross-country ski races all over the Midwest. And I've continued on mountain bike series. In fact, I'm on my way right now to a canoe workout, which is pretty intense canoeing since I live near Winona and the home of Winona Canoes. And plus, I'm a master swimmer. All I can say for people listening to this is you don't quit. You know, you don't quit unless you literally can't get up off a chair. But I'm a big proponent of staying active. I mean, I lift at the Y. I do all these things. I don't know where I got that from. Must be genetics or something. But
I think it helps if it's fun too, right? Mm-hmm. When it's a fun activity, it's a lot easier for you to go out and participate. I also think it's wonderful that you're doing a great combination of upper extremity exercises. Canoeing is going to work your arms and your upper body. Swimming is upper body. Cross-country skiing, biking, both lower extremity exercises. They'll all get your heart working with cardiovascular work, and none of them are really jarring or loading to your lower extremity joints. Some people can develop some arthritis and some pain in their hips and knees with the aging process. You don't have to, but some people do. Those individuals would tolerate something like skiing or biking better than running and jogging. So picking the type of exercise, even though it's in a category of aerobic or strength training, is important.
James, thanks a lot for sharing that. Keep it up. Now, James is a wee bit older than I am. I'm not doing anywhere near as much exercise as James is. Carlin, I do walk a fair amount. I don't know. Does walking count?
Oh, that's a great question. Walking can count for general exercise outside. So if you're walking at a pace where you're starting to breathe a little bit heavier, you can carry on a conversation, but you're not huffing and puffing. That's probably moderate intensity, and there's nothing wrong with doing that if your goal is to get outside, work your heart muscle a little bit. If you wanted to be making your bones stronger or adding mass to your muscles, you would need to do something a little bit more than that. Doesn't mean that walking's not good. It means you can maybe mix and match different activities so you can accomplish all the goals that you're looking for. For adding some strength to your bones, you really need a little more impact. So you could walk maybe with trekking poles, and you'd be pounding your poles into the pavement while you're walking. That would be more of an impact load, if that makes sense.
Sure. Let's go to another caller now. Lyric is with us in Blanchardville. Lyric, hi.
Hi. A few years ago, I got injured and had a brain concussion, and the best medicine for me was that walking in water the Upland Hills and Dodgeville has, where you walk across the floor to an area and it lowers down into a pool that's about 9 feet wide and maybe 16 feet long. The water, if your knees or your ankles are injured, the water supports your body weight, and in front of you is a bar that you can hang on if you've got a balance problem, so you feel very safe. You can tell them how high you want the jets of water that are moving in the pool and how deep you want it. But my favorite thing was that the endorphins that your body gets when you're walking in that water is like the best antidepressant in the world, and it lasts 2 or 3 days at least. It's wonderful.
Lyric, thank you so much for sharing that. And that's, Carlin, for people who can't have a lot of impact, that could be a great option, it sounds like.
That is a great option. And she's absolutely right that when you can participate in an activity that makes you feel good and you do have the endorphin release, you know you're doing something positive for your body. But when it's fun and it's enjoyable, you're going to stick with it. And of course, for all of us, that's the real trick, is being able to find something that we can continue to do because it's fun and we enjoy it and it makes us feel good.
Lyric, thanks a lot for sharing that at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Carlin Ault, clinical professor of physical therapy at UW-Milwaukee, about how to adapt our exercise habits, our fitness routines, as we get older to help keep us mobile and healthy. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What goals do you have for remaining active as you age? Are there recreational or practical activities that you're worried about having to leave behind? Our guest might be able to help you find something that could replace it. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Carlin Ault, Clinical Associate Professor of Physical Therapy at UW-Milwaukee. We're talking about how we can change our workout, our fitness routine as we get older, so we can continue to live active and healthy lives. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a lifelong exerciser? How did that change over the years, if at all? Have you hit an age where you're thinking, I got to start doing some stuff? Because you have a sedentary normal person job like radio host. I don't know. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Jim is with us in Juneau. Jim, hello.
Hello. Yes. Thanks for taking the call. Anyways, I'm 60 this year, and during COVID, I tried seeing what retiring would look like, and I can't do it. And so I gave up my job that I had, and now I'm back into construction. I'll tell you what, It was hard getting going, but daggone it, I've never felt this good in my life, you know?
Jim, did you do exercise, apart from the exercise involved in the construction work itself? Like, were you doing stuff to build up to that?
Yeah. During the winter, I went ahead because they don't hire in the winter. So during the winter, I got a membership at the Y, and I made sure that I was, you know, doing the treadmills, walking the block around here, lifting a little weight to try and make sure that I wasn't going to strain something right out the gate. But, yeah.
I love it, Jim. Thanks a lot for sharing that story. Carl, it sounds like Jim was really smart about getting back into construction work there.
Yeah, yes, construction is certainly a physical job that will keep you using your muscles most definitely. One comment I do want to add to what Jim said is that the target, if most of us are going to the gym and working on muscle strengthening, we want to make sure that we're working hard enough that we're going to get some benefit out of it. And that is, in physical therapy term, we'd be looking at like 60 to 80% of your one rep max, meaning the most that you can lift. But that's a little complicated for most of us to do when we go to the gym. But if you think about it in the number of repetitions you could do on an exercise, if I'm doing bicep curls to make my bicep, my upper arm stronger, I should be lifting a weight that's heavy enough that by the time I get to number 10, I could almost not do one more repetition. If I'm aiming for 10 repetitions, I'm probably at about 75% of my one rep max, which means I'm going to be giving my body a stimulus to add more muscle, add more protein. Anywhere between 8 and 12 is good, but 10 is kind of around that sweet spot. So that might help people is if you can do 30 and you think you're adding muscle mass, you need to push yourself a little harder with a heavier weight so you can't do quite so many reps. That's the stimulus to add your muscle. And I'm sure that Jim is doing that when he's working construction, lifting heavy loads.
Jim, thanks a lot for sharing your story at 800-642-1234. Kenny is with us now in Rice Lake. Kenny, hi. Are you there, Kenny?
Yeah.
Hi. What did you want to tell us about?
I'm a welder by trade, and oftentimes in the shop I work in, I hear from the gentleman my age or in our 60s that all you need to do is work hard, and that's going to help you stay in good shape. When I've learned over the years that I like to go to the gym and work out, ride bicycle, and do aerobic activities, and it seems to keep you in much better shape than just, quote, working hard.
All right. And Kenny, have you talked your coworkers into going biking with you or hitting the gym with you?
Boy, you know, they just don't seem to be really responsive to that. They don't want to jump in and go to the spin class at the gym, but maybe they will.
All right. Tell them we sent you, Kenny. Thanks a lot for sharing that story. Carlin, again, Kenny seems to be on the right track here.
Yeah, we have. Well, of course, we have wonderful listeners on public radio. They're all exercising. Terrific.
Kenny, thanks for the call. Carlin, one zone of exercise we haven't talked about a ton yet related to, you were talking about falls earlier, is balance. Now, when people are in their teens and 20s, they might not be thinking about balance as an exercise issue. Why does that get important? What can we do about it?
Balance is really important. Single leg balance, because if you think about standing at home and getting dressed, you're standing on one leg and have to put your leg through the other leg of the pant, or you have to sit down to be able to do that. So balance is important for walking, for transitions, for slippery surfaces. Often, you know, getting up from sit to stand, you might have been dozing and you're startled. It's a real it's a danger zone when you're making transitions between sit to stand, and that does relate to balance. In addition to just having good muscle strength and the ability to kind of take all of your weight, our vision changes, our hearing changes. We might have a lot of wax built up in our ears. The vestibular system and your visual system also play a role in balance. I often think of getting up to go to the bathroom at night. If your house is completely dark, you have taken away, you're a little bit groggy, and you've taken away that visual system from being able to help you with your balance. So I am a big fan of night lights for the aging population, so that as you take away some of those other supports for you to maintain good balance, vision and your vestibular system, that you've, you're supporting yourself if you've got any changes in diabetes or poor range of motion in your legs that can affect your balance.
Talking to Carlin Alt from UW-Milwaukee, physical therapist there, talking about our changing exercise and fitness needs as we age. Back to your calls now with Kim in Mequon. Hi, Kim.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What's your story?
Well, I have been a lifelong exerciser. I am 69 this year. I still downhill ski, cross-country ski, ride my bike. I mean, I started riding a bike in my teens. I have three bikes. I still ride them. I rode my bike to work today and back. And my job is teaching fitness classes for seniors. So I cannot tell you how many times I've had someone come to the classes new and start working out. We do weight training. We do a little cardio. And they will come back to me like 3 or 4 months later and say, hey, I just went to my doctor. And my doctor's like, what are you doing? Keep it up. Your blood pressure's down. You know, your stats are really, really good. So I just want to say, if anybody is a little older and hasn't worked out for a long time, don't let that stop you, because you can get back into the game.
Kim, thanks a lot for the call and the inspiration. Carlin, Kim pointing toward the, like, even within a few months, apparently doctors noticing a difference when people get back into exercise.
Yeah, and absolutely. And there are some studies that will show that even into your 90s, you can add muscle mass. So that the body is very adaptive. And so you can start at any age and you will see changes. It does take... you know, 6 weeks at least to start to get muscle mass changes, but you can see improvements sooner than that. It's more of a neuromuscular training effect, but absolutely, you can see physical changes, body changes, strength, endurance changes, and you just overall, you feel better. And I will put in a little plug for protein, because as we age, the body's ability to, the amount of protein that we need to take in to help build our muscles, that changes a little bit. So everyone, but especially our older adults, need to be eating protein with just about every meal, because that's helping to maintain that muscle health and muscle strength.
Kim, thanks again for the call and the inspiration. Carlin, you mentioned, you know, people may have some different needs when it comes to exercise. I wanted to ask you about one of your specialties. You work with people on exercise and fatigue for survivors of cancer. What kind of different things might be at play there?
Well, cancer itself and all of the treatments for cancer can affect multiple systems in the body, can affect your heart muscle, so cardiovascular system. You can have a loss of extensibility, so things end up getting a little bit tight, can have some changes in your bone. So all systems can be affected either through cancer and or cancer treatment. And for some reason, we tend to not, we meaning the medical system, don't always routinely refer our patients who are undergoing or have completed treatment for cancer to physical therapy to get people back strength, muscle strength, cardiovascular conditioning. We don't do it in the same way that we do for heart attacks or for strokes or amputations. And that's really my mission, is to make sure that all cancer survivors, because there's millions of them, are treated with specific exercise to help people return back to a highly functional life. It's not just about surviving the treatment. It's about returning to thriving and having a really high quality of life, being strong and being able to enjoy every day because you do feel good.
Carlin, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you.
That's Carlin Alt, Clinical Associate Professor of Physical Therapy at UW-Milwaukee. We talked to her today about how we can change our workout and fitness routines as we get older to help keep us active, hopefully for years to come.